You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Last week, the government announced it would amend climate laws to prevent companies from being sued over damage caused by greenhouse gas emissions. The change will prevent findings of liability in torts and would apply to current and future cases. The amendment is in response to a case against Fonterra made by iwi leader and activist Mike Smith, who is not seeking any financial damages but felt it was in the public's interest to have the company held liable. The Supreme Court granted Smith the right to pursue the case, raising questions if this government action is going around the courts and breaching democratic checks and balances. These changes will directly go against International Court of Justice opinion, which confirmed countries have a duty to prevent significant harm to the environment and to regulate the activities of companies within their jurisdiction. To discuss the repercussions of this climate law change, I talked to Dr. Justin Sobion from the University of Auckland Law School. Can you just give a bit of an explanation of why this government decision to change climate law in torts is so controversial?
Yeah, it's controversial to the extent that the general trend, I would say, the general movement, I would say, especially coming out of the COVID era in this decade, is towards climate justice, climate emergencies, and getting on top of what we the UN has labeled a triple planetary crisis, which is climate change, biodiversity loss, and pervasive pollution. And now this movement has started even back in the 70s when you speak about the first Earth Day in 1971 with the formation or establishment of Greenpeace. But I think as we've reached the pinnacle of this mountain we've been trying to climb, which is climate awareness and climate justice. And it has been seen within the last 5 years where we've had three advisory opinions on climate change from three well-established, respected international tribunals, and that is the Inter-American Court on Human Rights and the International Tribunal for Law of the Sea, and lastly with the International Court of Justice. So states, all these tribunals have been saying, just as what IPCC science has been saying, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a UN scientific body, they have been saying that states, we need to be more ambitious. We need to cut greenhouse gases by the end of this decade, by 2030, if we want to reach that 1.5 degrees centigrade increase in temperature goal. So we need to be ambitious. We need to move forward on the climate agenda. So I think this particular legislation goes contrary to that, to this movement that we've been having. So that's why I think it becomes very controversial, given the climate that we are in, no pun intended. Yeah.
And this law change in particular, kind of self-admitted by the government, is in regards to the Mike Smith case against Fonterra. And Supreme Court gave permission for that case to go ahead. Do you think it potentially sets a bit of a dangerous precedent of the government going over the top of the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I think I would like to think so, because here we have the Supreme Court. Now, the trial of Smith hasn't even started yet, right? We are still going through the preliminary motions of the case. Of course, Fonterra, the respondents, they wanted to strike out his claim. So the trial hasn't even started yet. And the Supreme Court has said, after it went, they tried to strike out a certain claim, essentially trying to strike out the whole claim with the tort, with respect to tort and climate change law. The Supreme Court says Smith has a good has to have his day in court. Let us put forward. We are not going to stymie the tort, broadening of the scope of tort to climate change law. That's something that a trial judge should do, right? Let's hear the case on its merits. And I understand it's going to be listed for April next year, 2027. That's my understanding. I could be wrong, but I think it's around then. So what we're trying to say is that no matter who wins this case at the High Court, if it's Smith, if it's Fonterra and others, it's going to be appealed to the Court of Appeal, right? That will take maybe another, I don't know, 6 months to a year. And no matter who wins at the Court of Appeal, it's going to be appealed to the Supreme Court, right? That will be another 6 to 9 months, maybe a year. So we are looking at maybe, at best, almost 3 years of further litigation, right? And I think that is what I think lawmakers need to be concerned about or wary about, is that let the law develop and take its course. We're not going to get a decision in Smith and Fonterra, a final decision tomorrow, right? So you should not, I would think, the legislative branch of parliament should not do anything to stymie an action that will probably take, you're looking at 3 to 4 years from now, right? And it's not to say, okay, we're going to take future actions, which is still a problem for me, but you're saying we're going to do this retroactively, right? So it would affect Smith's case. We all know this is about Smith and Fonterra. And if you can affect a case that is currently going on, think about possible cases that could have come through the pipeline because of this particular legislation. So that's why I think that the Supreme Court, being the highest court in New Zealand, that ought to be respected, what they said. Let the law take its course and let it go through the judicial system and not without any undue interference and separation of powers. So that's my take on it, I think, yeah.
You mentioned that it's going to be done retrospectively. Is that really unusual for a law change to be done like that to court cases?
No. There is legislation that applies retroactively to current cases. There is law, but when you do that, with a sense of having collaborative talks. You do that, you get some feedback from the public, it runs through a certain motion within the parliament, so it has to be urgent, right? Now, we are saying this is not urgent, right? Because it's going to, Smith and Fonterra, as I said, it's going to take quite a long time for this matter to be decided in the Supreme Court, because as you said, it's such an important case. It's going to take quite a long time. It's going to be appealed to the Supreme Court. So we are saying that you need to be a bit, let the law run its course, let it be a transparent process. And we do not think that, I do not think that this particular legislation warrants a retroactive type of feature or format. I certainly do not think so.
And another potential precedent being set, are you concerned that the government isn't aligning with the ICJ on this issue?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the main point. New Zealand was one of the core supporters of Vanuatu's initiative to take International Court of Justice, to take climate change to the International Court of Justice. So they were fully behind or supporting Vanuatu in this cause as one of the, if I were to say, the bigger brother or sister of the Pacific region. And then we had Australia coming on afterwards. But New Zealand was clear out the line from the beginning. And the ICJ actually said that states have an obligation to protect the climate system. And they even went so far to say that states also have an obligation to regulate companies who actually operate within their jurisdiction to ensure that those companies do not produce greenhouse gases, do not use the atmosphere as their dumping ground, do not cause any damage to the climate system. So it's not only the government, the state has to protect the climate system, but also the state has to ensure that others who operate, including multinational corporations, the ICJ is clear on that, right? Because you invite in these multinational corporations, or maybe companies, your own local companies, if that's the case, and you have to ensure that they comply with the international law obligations as handed down by the International Court of Justice. So we see that passing that legislation would be totally against the advice of the International Court of Justice. Now, I say against the advice because we all know the ICJ advisory opinion is what it is. It's an opinion of the court. We have asked the court a certain question, and the court has given us an opinion. So it goes against one of the highest court of the world, the highest tribunal. That's the cream of the crop. You can't get higher than that, right, in terms of jurisprudence and international law. So, yeah, and what I'm really watching at now, actually, I actually had a word with some of my colleagues in Vanuatu at the United Nations in New York. This week, actually on Wednesday, the 22nd, there's a resolution that is going to be tabled at the United Nations, where states are being called upon to implement to recognize and to implement the decision of the ICJ at the Hague. So I think I'm keenly observing to see how New Zealand would vote on that. So right now I understand the government hasn't laid a formal position as yet for my colleagues back in New York who are working the case. But we are keenly waiting to see how New Zealand would vote on that particular resolution. So if, for example, they vote yes, they would wish to implement and to recognize that advisory court, International Court of Justice advisory opinion, I think that would well be contrary to their domestic plans to be tabled at the Parliament.
That was Dr. Justin Sobion from the University of Auckland Law School speaking to me about the government's climate change law changes and their potential repercussions.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.